Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by eatdrinkindy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.
Welcome to Eat Drink Indiana Radio and WFYI HD to the Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. Well, I just have to say it, Happy Thanksgiving! It's one of my favorite holidays, and it is coming right up. I like to soak it up as much as possible before the big Christmas rush is upon us. So I hope your turkey is thawing in the fridge and that you're getting ready for the big day, too. Honestly, I haven't started cooking yet, but this weekend we'll kick off our Thanksgiving extravaganza of pies, cranberry sauce, a heritage raspberry gelatin ring mold recipe, and of course the turkey. And we'll be taking it all over the river and through the woods, or at least up to northern Indiana, for a big family Thanksgiving this year. But if you're not ready yet, no worries, because we've got some Thanksgiving inspiration for you today with a little advice on what to pour to help keep everyone happy around the Thanksgiving table. We'll be talking with Tia Agnew of New Day Craft about cider and mead for Thanksgiving. And we'll hear about the big release that happens the day after Thanksgiving. We'll also tackle the which wine to serve question with Lisa Cunningham of the Mass Ave Wine Shop. And for a little local help on putting out a great spread for holiday parties, we'll be talking with indie food entrepreneur Erin Eds about her line of Country Mouse City Mouse products that are popping up for the holidays. And we'll talk to Dean Wilson, a longtime local wine guy who is now living the dream and making his own wine in California. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Well, before we get to talking today about what to pour for your Thanksgiving meal, we just have to hear about a special release that happens the day after Thanksgiving. New Day Craft's super popular mead, Imperial Breakfast Magpie, makes its appearance on Black Friday. New Day's Tia Agnew tells us all about it.
For those of us who know about New Day, they probably know us from Imperial Breakfast Magpie Day. Our Imperial B-Mag, as we like to call it, is this delicious black raspberry mead that's been infused with espresso from bee coffee roasters here in the city. And the Imperial version, we've barrel-aged it for a year in bourbon barrels. Again, shout out to bourbon. I'm a gin drinker too, but we'll talk about that variety another time. But it's something we make a very limited release of. Last year, we sold out of it in 3 hours. Needless to say, we made more because people were like, what? I can't get this till next year. I'm like, sorry. So the line starts early. We open at noon sharp on, you know, the day after Thanksgiving. So skip the malls. Come drink with us. It's a lot more fun. We have a totally great time. Bring your winter jacket in case it's cold that day, because there will be a long line. But we try to run through that really fast and get everybody a glass. You can drink some in-house, and you can take up to a case this year. We only did 6 bottles last year, but we made a lot more to try and share the love, so you can get up to a case of 12. I have heard rumors of some mead mules out there, people buying for family members and friends who can't make it, because we do not take any online or pre-orders on this one. It's a first come, first serve.
Now, that's so fun and very exciting to have all that anticipation. How did this happen?
That's a really good question. we like to say it really happened naturally. We started off with this variety called Breakfast Magpie, the base parent variety. It's our winter seasonal. We release it every year around in December here in house. And we were like, wow, how can we improve upon this really fun style? We started barrel aging it, because why not? A bourbon that would taste nice with blackberries and all these things. Brett and I, my husband and I, are really big, you know, into food and, you know, playing around and come up with really unique flavor profiles. And we thought, oh, this will be a fun one-off. People will dig it, you know, might, you know, get a little bit of buzz. And when we released it the first year, just in glasses, and people were like, this is amazing. We're like, oh, that's great. We'll do more next year, and we'll bottle it. And that was last year. So we thought, oh, there'll be a few people out front, you know, and we have a very small window out to the front. And so, you know, it's about 10 o'clock, and we're setting up, and I see a couple folks out there. We wave, hey. I'm like, hey, oh, that's sweet. There's a couple people out there in line. noon rolls around, I go to open the door, and there's got to be over 100 people. I mean, all the way down the block, and I just went, I can't say that on the radio, holy, you know, and I was like, wow, this is great, everyone's like, hi, and so it was a very overwhelming and humbling experience.
Oh my goodness, so you had lines, you know, down the street. Yeah. For this, you know, wonderful variety that people can only get once a year. Now they really, I mean, you really only do make it once a year. They're not going to get it in July, right?
No, we do, as folks know, we do hold back a few kegs, to release sporadically throughout the year. Like we did for our 10-year anniversary this year, we snuck one in and sold it by the glass only. But yeah, this is the day. The bottles, that's it. There it is. Come and get it while you can.
But now tell me a little bit more about it, can you compare it to something that people might be familiar with?
Sure. The closest I can come to describing the Imperial Breakfast Magpie, it's like a bourbon-noted, it's kind of like a berry-noted chocolate stout that you then bourbon-aged. That's about as close as I can get. It's really, it's got a real heady coffee aroma. And you smell it and you think this is going to be a jam bomb. It's going to be really sweet. It's not. It's, you know, it's got a nice richness up front, but it's got a really clean finish, which means you can drink a lot of it, which you have to be careful. It is 13% alcohol this year. Holy moly. Yeah, we had to get new labels approved on that one because we were like, wow, it's really, really high in alcohol this year. And that's simply it's what happens when, you know, you put it in bourbon barrels, and these were really fresh barrels, and they took a lot of bourbon out of the staves, and so you and I get to benefit from that. But, yeah, it's just this really delicious, very noted chocolate stout with a hint of a note of bourbon in it.
Now, what's the price, and how is it sold, and how much can people get again?
Sure. The price is going to be $15 a bottle, and our bottle size is 16.9 ounces or 500 milliliters. So think about all those Belgian beers that you enjoy, same bottle size. We call them Belgian bombers in-house. You can buy them. Of course, they're available only by the bottle. We don't do growler fills on this guy. You can get them in glass in-house, limit two people. Or else I'm going to be carting you out of here in a wheelbarrow. It's not happening. But we are, as I said earlier, upping the limit. I mean, it was a 6-bottle limit last year. It's 12. It's a full case this year.
So people can carry out a case.
They can indeed, yes. And come get your, bring your friends, and you all can take a case.
We've been talking Imperial Breakfast Magpie with Tia Agnew of New Day Craft. Stay with us for more cider and mead options for Thanksgiving here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. So cider and mead definitely sound historically appropriate for the Thanksgiving table. I can imagine the pilgrims raising tankards of hard cider and toasting to their Thanksgiving abundance. And if you want to do the same this year, Tia Agnew of New Day Craft has some advice on what might go well with your holiday turkey.
We make, of course, craft mead and cider. They're really food friendly and they go great with that, you know, really, you know, very, you know, unctuous, really big, heavy, hefty Thanksgiving meal, that, you know, we normally have at our tables. We have, I would say probably your best bet for Thanksgiving on the cider side would be the Johnny Chapman. It's a little bit richer of the two hard ciders that we have right now. It has a little bit of sorghum added to it, so it kind of has that farm fresh, pressed apple flavor with a nice kick of alcohol. So it's, you know, a bonus for, you know, this family time at the dinner table.
You know, it could be a little tense at Thanksgiving. I mean, maybe.
It makes it all better. So that's on the cider side. On the mead side, and for folks who aren't familiar, both our mead and our cider are made in a similar style. So all of our meads, which is honey-based alcohol, drink like a hard cider style-wise. So they're carbonated, they're in beer bottles, or you can get them in growlers to go. Or kegs if you really want a bunch. But with the mead, gosh, let's see, we've got a couple options that will go really well. If you want something that's kind of like fruit on fruit, it can, with rich poultries, you know, fruits are really a nice match. So actually I have a cherry mead called Washington's Folly. It's a little bit drier, actually, than the Johnny Chapman, but it still has a little bit of sweetness to it, so it can handle that turkey and that stuffing, that oyster dressing, if your family's into that. It's a really nice pairing with poultry. Also, another for a really dry style would be the Rethinker. It's a dry hopped blueberry mead.
Well, now that sounds interesting. Now, tell me a little bit about that, because people might not be familiar with that sort of thing.
Sure. Again, it starts off as that, you know, kind of think of like a blueberry hard cider almost, but we actually add hops to it. So, of course, hops are one of the main flavor components in a traditional beer. You know, still gluten-free, because hops are flours. They're not grain-based, so a little bonus there for your gluten-free folks. But it kind of gives this, you know, nice kind of, you know, aromatic, you know, kind of beer kind of notation on the nose, but it kind of really dries out the flavor profile. It kind of gives you that kind of like acrid snap that you get from the hops, and then that nice floral fruit tone on the finish.
Well, now those are kind of neat, because, you know, that's the, of course, the challenge of Thanksgiving is you've got turkey, you've got the dressing, you've got, you know, you've got the cranberries, you've got all these things that might not necessarily fit with one type of drink.
Right, exactly. And our products are really nice. I mean, they're easy drinking on their own, but they're very, very crafted to be very food friendly. And with you have that, you know, kind of that wide diaspora of, you know, different, you know, foods and flavors at Thanksgiving, these are really kind of, you know, bring it together without you feeling like, oh, that red only goes with this part, or that, you know, Pilsner only goes with this part, or these actually meld really well with everything on the table.
Or the issue of, well, do I serve white or do
right,
I serve
exactly,
red?
Yeah.
And you know, I think that the craft ciders or meads could be, you know, a kind of a cool option, you know, something else to talk about at the Thanksgiving table other than all those other things that you shouldn't talk about at the Thanksgiving table.
Definitely. Talk about booze. It's much safer. But yeah, in our case too, it's also, they appeal to a wide variety of people. My beer drinkers love it. My wine drinkers love it. My bourbon on the rocks like me drinkers love it. You know, again, everybody kind of enjoys the product, and it is kind of a fun conversation piece for like, what is this? It's in a beer bottle, but it's got apples, but what? I like it, you know, so it's a lot of fun.
We've been talking cider and mead with Tia Agnew of New Day Craft. For more information, including details on the release of Imperial Breakfast Magpie, you can stop by their Fountain Square tasting room or go to newdaycraft.com. Locally made craft meads and hard ciders offer great options for your Thanksgiving table. Traditionalists are no doubt wrestling with the which wine to serve question. Red, white, Pinot, sparkling, all possible options, of course. But for some more specific advice, I stopped by the Mass Ave Wine Shop recently and talked with manager Lisa Cunningham and got her recommendations for what to open on Thanksgiving.
I think there's a lot of different flavors going on in your Thanksgiving dinner. And then there are people's preferences. With white meat, some people say you have to have white wine, but what if everyone at your Thanksgiving dinner table likes red? What are your options there? When you're entertaining a large group of people, some are going to like sweet, some are going to like dry, some will like white, some will like red. What can you pour that's going to please a wide variety of palates?
And so there probably isn't anything that would please all of those different variations of wine drinkers, right?
Well, I don't think there's any one magic wine that's going to cover all of your bases, but I think you can find wines that are a nice middle ground between sweet and dry. And the white and red controversy, I say drink what you love. And do your best to complement flavors and contrast flavors, but it shouldn't be a trial or a tribulation. It should be fun and it should be enjoyable.
So if I like red, I can drink red at Thanksgiving and I shouldn't worry about it.
No, don't ever worry about it. Drink what you love. And think of it as just another course, another part of the meal. It doesn't have to be matchy-matchy or follow anybody's rules.
So I think that's what we get bogged down in trying to follow some sort of rule about the Thanksgiving wine. And so it's kind of a relief to know that there aren't any rules then that I have to follow.
None that you have to follow. It's always fun to see what other people are doing. Here at Mass Ave Wine, we like to kind of mix it up. We have a few favorites, and they're really unusual wines. So I think those are always fun at a big family gathering or with your friends and fellow wine lovers to talk about a really unique grape or a different growing region or a unique blend or something like that, a wine that's contemplative. You're not only sipping and enjoying it, but you're able to talk about it and spark some interesting conversation.
So what are some of the classic wine Thanksgiving pairings?
Well, in the white wines, usually people steer towards Rieslings and Gewürztraminers.
Now, why is that?
Well, the fruit profiles of both of those wines are kind of stone fruit, peach, apricot, so softer fruits, a little sweeter in style, but they can be dry in the finish with still have that nice fruity quality, which is that middle ground between sweet and dry. And they also have, I think, the Gewürztraminer has a lot of fall spice to it that you associate with Thanksgiving. The warm spices, cinnamon, nutmeg, those kind of.
So it would tend to sort of kind of match the flavors,
right, and complement. And then with red wines, people go more toward the softer style reds because it's a white meat. Usually you're having turkey or some people have ham, but a big heavy tannic Cabernet would kind of overpower that. Like I said though, if you love Cabernet, just drink it and have at it. But the classics would probably be more along the lines of Pinot Noir. And then perhaps a trend that has come and gone is the Nouveau Beaujolais that are released in November.
Yeah, that has always been a thing, you know, the Nouveau Beaujolais est arrivé, you know, all the hype and the marketing and the excitement that we used to see about that. Now, what is that? What's the situation right now with that?
I think it's faded a bit. I think there are certain people that are still going to buy the Nouveau Beaujolais and enjoy it, which is fine. It needs to be enjoyed before the first of the year, really. It's a wine that's made to be consumed right away. It's not age-worthy. It's very simple, very fruity. I think there are a lot of other options out there that are reasonably priced and interesting. And I think people's horizons are just broadening.
So if we're going beyond some of the typical Thanksgiving choices, where would we start?
I like to start with, like I said, some really unusual varietals. There's a varietal that was originally from Germany that is now grown in South Africa called Buchetraub. It is a delicious white wine and spans that from would appeal to someone who likes sweet wine and appeal to someone who likes dry wine because it has complexity. A lot of those flavors we talked about with Riesling and Gewürztraminer, the stone fruit, but also has some ripe pear flavors, and it can have a almost a buttery texture to it and a richness from oak aging.
So I can see why that would appeal.
Yeah, you know? It can have some of those spicy notes too of cinnamon. The one that we carry is from Cedarburg in South Africa, and it has those warm spices and some tree fruits and some stone fruit flavors. Good acidity, very palate cleansing.
So it would hold up to the, you know, to the gravy and the richness of some of the Thanksgiving
and
food.
And in my family, at Thanksgiving, I don't know of very few dishes in my family are without cream cheese.
They put cream cheese in everything.
So, yeah, it's very palate cleansing and a light style. So you have some heavy foods and then you have a light, crisp, refreshing wine. Another one I like is from Italy. It's called Falanghina, and it's an ancient grape, almost extinct. Someone found some, cultivated it, and brought it back.
Really? Now, that's very cool. Of course, and there's some of your dinner table conversation.
Mm-hmm. And so Falanghina has some really interesting flavors of, like, orange flower water, kumquats, crystallized orange peel, really unique flavors that maybe not everyone will pick up on, but you will pick up on the fact that it's different. It's very unique and very, I just call it pretty. The first time I took a sip of it, I thought, wow, that's just pretty, floral and refreshing.
Well, now that sounds nice. I think that could be very cool for the dinner table. Where else could you go?
I have one that I just recently brought to the shop called Serenity. It's from the Brassfield Winery in California. And it is a blend of Pinot Gris, Riesling, and Gewürztraminer. So it's got a lot of people's favorites. When you're pouring wine for a huge crowd, if you pour a blend, I think those wines are going to touch on notes of a lot of different wines and maybe please a lot of different palates. So I like, if I don't know people's wine choice, wine favorites, I like to go with something like that. That's going to, I'm probably going to find somebody's favorite wine in that blend. Yeah. And then on the red side, going with a traditional choice of Pinot Noir, I think is nice. They have really nice cherry berry flavors. Sometimes they'll have a little bit of a cinnamon bark spice in the finish, which is complimentary. And some of the bright red fruits in Pinot Noirs will complement those cranberry or, in my family, it's crabapple kind of qualities. And then the, on the Beaujolais Nouveau, we carry a wine from J. Lohr in California that is called Valdegui. The grape is called Valdegui. It is similar to a Napa Gamay or a Gamay Beaujolais. And it has those bright red fruits, but a little more complexity and a little more interest, I think, than a Nouveau Beaujolais. And you don't have to drink it all by January. It will, it's cellar worthy. And another one I think is a great little wine is a Primitivo from Italy. Primitivo is almost genetically identical to American Zinfandel. But they make it in a different style in Italy. It's softer, not as jammy and not as peppery spicy. It's just it's got good red fruit flavors again and some and a little bit of a more of a warm spice that I think again is complimentary to your Thanksgiving.
So when people go to search, you know, should they where do they start looking when they're looking?
Even at grocery stores these days, there is a wine professional. There's a manager of the wine department. There's usually someone who knows about wine in your liquor store or in your wine shop. And I say ask for help. You can give them your menu. Tell them what you're having and what they think would go well with the wine. If there's no one there to help you, read the back label. Of the wine. A lot of times they'll have notes on the back of the label that'll tell you the fruit profile. Especially in your Rieslings, there's a really cool thing that a lot of Riesling producers are doing now where they put a sweetness scale on the back. And I can show you four or five bottles that I have here in the shop that have employed that new thing on their labels. And it's just a sliding scale, sweet at one end, dry at the other, and they'll mark on that scale where their wine falls. A lot of people go for a lower alcohol wine at a holiday. You're going to be consuming a lot more wine, and you want to drink responsibly. The lower alcohol wines usually will have a little bit of residual sugar in them. If not usually, that's sometimes a good indicator that it has a little more residual sugar. But like I said, lower alcohol. If you have a couple to three glasses of wine, you're not going to be so worried as if you have a 16.5% alcohol wine. You know, there are some great little wines that are 12.5-13% alcohol and lower.
Now, what are the price ranges on some of these wines?
All of the wines that I talked about here today are under $16. Most of them around the $13-$14 range. I don't think you have to spend a ton of money on wine to get some good wines. And that's really what we specialize in here. But that's another thing. If you're going to, when you go into a wine shop, let them know how much you want to spend.
Yeah, now, is that okay? Because you're
comfortable with your choice.
Because, you know, you feel like, okay, I only want to spend about $10, you know.
I don't think that's unreasonable at all, especially if it's something new. You don't want to have buyer's remorse. If you spent $10 on the bottle of wine and it's not exactly your favorite, then you don't have that buyer's remorse. At least you learned what you don't like. then you're better armed. The next time you go into the store, you say, this is what I like and this is what I don't like. And they're going to be able to help you so much more. Knowing what you don't like is almost as important as knowing what you like.
We've been talking Thanksgiving wines with Lisa Cunningham of the Mass Ave Wine Shop. For more information, go to massavewine.com. The big Thanksgiving meal will be over by this time next week, but the holidays are just getting started. There'll be parties and pitch-ins from now through New Year's, and one local food entrepreneur has popped back up with some options for easy entertaining. Aaron Ed's line of Country Mouse, City Mouse, dips, spreads, sauces, and butters was a fixture for years at local farmers markets, and she is bringing back her most popular items for a limited pop-up engagement for the holidays.
Really excited to be bringing it back, at least through the holidays. If you remember, Country Mouse City Mouse was a brand that my sister and I started in 2008, making artisan dips and spreads and salad dressings that we would take from ingredients that we would buy at the farmers markets.
So very early on, it was one of those value-added products, one of the artisan food products from back in the earlier days of farmers markets.
Yeah, when we started out, it was really funny because markets didn't know where to put us. We were one of the first value-add products in Indianapolis, so we kind of had to carve out that niche for ourselves. It was very successful. We really enjoyed doing it, but when Hoosier Mama started to take off, I kind of put it on the back burner, and now I'm ready to maybe reintroduce it for the holidays.
So for a limited time only, people can get some of the Country Mouse, City Mouse products that they probably remember from the farmers market. So tell me what kind of products that you have available.
Yeah, to this day, I have people ask on a weekly basis, is there anywhere I can get the Tally Ho salad dressing? Where can I get the Mama J's Romesco? Are you ever going to make the Jezebel again? You know, yada, 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 yada. And I've always said, I don't think so. Not right now. It's not really on my mind, but now it is. We're going to rock it out. I have a great list of some of our classic core products as well as some of our more favorite products over the time. And we're going to make them come out again.
So people can get the Romesco or the Tally Ho. So what is available?
I have, the Romesco, the Jezebel, the Chimichurri Pesto, Tally Ho, Corduroy Road, three of our most popular compound butters, a cranberry chutney, perfect for Thanksgiving, and our fabulous roasted butternut squash apple soup.
So some of these things, you call them dips or spreads, but they can be used in all sorts of different ways.
Incredibly versatile. The Jezebel, for instance, most classic way to serve that is just over a block of cream cheese with crackers, but it also makes a killer glaze for your ham or for turkey or just a condiment to have out on the table, you know, an accoutrement, if you will, to help enhance your guests' dining experience. Mm.
And the chimichurri pesto.
Anything. I mean, it's great on like grilled chicken. You can make pasta salad out of it. You can use it as a pasta sauce.
Pasta sauce is where I was always going with.
Put it on goat, put it on a log of goat cheese and put it out with like a garlic crostini, and it's killer.
So this kind of takes a little bit of the effort out of your maybe holiday appetizer spread for people. If, you have a few of these, then you can just get them out and then you have your party, right?
Yeah, the compound butters too. All you have to do is leave them out on the counter to soften, put them out with your rolls, put them out with your, your appetizers, and people will just say, oh my gosh, where did you get this stuff? It's incredible.
Now tell me what's in a compound butter in case people might not be familiar with it.
A compound butter is essentially just a butter that we let soften and then we whip in the various ingredients. We have one that has chives, sunflower seeds, and lime. We have one that has balsamic, blue cheese, and dried cranberries. And then we have one that is chipotle, honey, and oregano.
Oh, my goodness. So these are very holiday-friendly flavors.
Very holiday-friendly, very, kind of the sweet and savory that play off of each other really nicely in all of them.
Now, how did you come up with the recipes for the Country Mouse, City Mouse specialties?
They all come from different sources. My mom and kind of our family background carries a lot of the history, especially with the Romesco, the Tally-Ho, and the Trilby. We haven't even talked about the Trilby.
Oh, wait, I'm gonna tell me about that one.
Trilby is the cheese ball to end all cheese balls. It's,
I love that.
People call it crack, and it is unlike anything you've ever had. I don't want to really give too much away, but I just, you're going to get addicted.
Well, all right. So you must have come up with these over the years as family recipes.
Yeah, they were always fixtures at any event, family reunion, party, or just, you know, sitting in my mom's fridge, and we would, you know, come over and have coffee and get out some snacks.
Now, what about the whole gluten-free kind of aspect of it? Some of them are, right?
The entire line is gluten-free. The entire line is also vegetarian, and most of the products are vegan, the exception being the compound butters.
Well, now, I imagine there's a lot of people that are specifically searching for that type of item, especially around the holidays when they want something a little more special.
Yeah, and you have to keep in mind that you're bringing in guests that may not have, you know, may have restrictions or dietary needs that you aren't necessarily taking into account. So having some of those core ingredients be as clean and free of possible allergens is really helpful when you're entertaining guests.
Oh, certainly. One less thing to stress about at the holidays, right? Because, and there's plenty to stress about, so might as well eliminate them where you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Keep it as simple and basic and approachable as possible. And these are all wholesome, delicious, you know, naturally made products.
The big question is, where can people get them?
Okay, so we have set up an online store where we are offering either pickup. Pickup location will be announced soon, so keep an eye on this website. But we're also offering delivery for anyone within the Indianapolis metropolitan area. So that includes the suburbs for $5.
Well, that sounds like a good deal, right?
Yeah, and you know, you can just order it, place your order online, and we will be delivering. The first round will be delivered on November 24th and 25th, so the two days preceding Thanksgiving, so you'll be all ready to go.
Okay, cool. Now, so they can go to the website, and what is that website?
www.mkt.com/country-mouse-city-mouse.
So people can search for Country Mouse, City Mouse, and this website, and they should be able to find it.
I certainly hope so. Yeah. If not, we do have a Facebook group where that will be up, and you just type in Country Mouse, City Mouse, Indie, and that will take you to our Facebook page. And on Twitter, I can be found at Aaron Eds, #2, #0. So Aaron Eds 2.0 on Twitter.
So you can find the products, you can find you can see what's available, set up delivery, and perhaps there's a pop-up store coming down the road?
Perhaps there is. Yes, we are in talks right now with a great location downtown to set up a pop-up store where we will have some of our awesome grab-and-go items as well as being a destination for your order pickups.
Well, terrific. So are you excited about, you know, bringing Country Mouse, City Mouse back?
I'm really, really excited. I would lie if I said I wasn't a little bit nervous. There are a couple products in this group that I haven't made in 5 years, but it's like riding a bike. I'm hoping it'll be just, you know, like I did it yesterday.
We've been talking with Erin Eds of Country Mouse, City Mouse. You can find her Dark Horse Delicatessen page on Facebook or go to squareup.com/market/Country Mouse, City Mouse. Well, it's something so many of us food and wine fans have probably thought about at least a little. Wouldn't it be great to have your own winery someday to just chase your dream and learn how to make wine? Well, longtime local wine guy Dean Wilson has been doing just that. You might remember him from Dino's Vino, his restaurant and shop in Fountain Square. But for the past 2 years, he's been in California learning the wine biz. And this past week, he was back in Indianapolis and debuted his first wine, Bella Boo Muscat Canelli, named for one of his daughters. I caught up with Dean this past week to hear about his first wine and how it all came about.
you know, we moved. I went to Ravenswood, did Crush for Joel Peterson, and got an experience of a big winery. And then 2014, I moved on to Caradine Estates up in St. Helena, and I worked in the tasting room, education the staff in the restaurant and on the tasting room, and then started working production when Vicky was pregnant. But that year, we also harvested our 14s for Scribble Scribble. So
now, tell me what you had done to get to that.
Yeah, I mean, Scribble Scribble, I have friends in the wine business, been in the wine business 20-some-odd years, and then I contacted Jed Steele, a good friend of mine in Lake County, and he had property in Lake County on Kelsey Bench, just north of where the fires were this year. And so we were safe there, but 14 was prior to the fires. And he had this little bench that he was going to regraft a Rus on, and I wanted to get the last of the Muscat Canelli that he had on that bench, and it was called Los Lomos Vineyard. And it was just killer fruit. So I sort of went through the vineyard with Steve Telecki, his vineyard manager. We tasted, and I was really impressed because these wines were almost, it was Muscat for sure, but it was almost Gewurztraminer-esque. And so my first inclination was to turn that sweet wine into a dry style, still have the sweet fruit up front, because that, I want to do something different than a Chardonnay or Sauvignon Blanc. And Muscat Canelli is like one of those wines. It's like a Riesling or a Gewurz. You can really play with it and have fun with it. So I dried it totally out into a dry style, which means your yeast are eating your sugars, and you can go to the negative numbers and totally dry it out, or you can leave a little hint of scotch of sweetness in there. So we left about a 0.15 RS, which is residual sugar. So it's got this beautiful sweet apricot honey kind of stone fruit, and then finishes on the palate like within a Granny Smith apple, and then bone dry with layer after layer. And then in the good words of my friend Lisa Cunningham, we put on the bottle, chill it and kill it, because that's pretty much what you need to do with it. It's a patio pounder. And
you're exactly right. It's so easy to drink.
Thank you. Yeah, I hope so. I mean, that's the intention. I made it for food. You know I'm a foodie, so the food and the wine is a big aspect to me. And you can't make a flabby wine, meaning too high in pH, and you can't make it monodimensional. You have to have layers. You have to have acidity. pH balance is important. Fruit component's important. But the biggest thing is acid. When you start coming, the acidity to a wine is the most important thing when it's a food wine. So all of our wines have a bright acidity to the back, and that's basically to clean the palate.
So this one that you just brought out, so catch me back up on where we were in the process.
So. Yeah, so hand-harvested Los Lomos, went up there, had a crew knock it out early in the morning, brought it back to the winery, 8 o'clock. We sat there and we pressed it. Quincy, Steele, and myself, kind of a collaboration on this. And I said, he's like, you know, when you're making wine, it's people think you're a winemaker. You're actually crushing the grapes and stuff, you know, with your hands, and it's not that way anymore. You know, and I'm like, okay, so we talk, and this juice is in the stainless steel, and we let it cold soak and, I mean, get cold stabilized, and then it starts going through a fermentation process where we add a yeast strand from Burgundy, which is good for their white wines, and it basically is a Burgundian yeast strand that just dissolves the sugars very slowly and methodically. So basically we're talking like 4 weeks of fermentation, where it normally takes reds 7 days to 12, 14 days to dry out. Well, this took 4 weeks, and then we wrapped it up in stainless steel with a steel with a bubble jacket, which basically keeps it cold, shipped it to Lodi, sat for 3 months in a cold stainless steel tank, and then we bottled it. So
now this was still 2014 when you're doing this.
Okay. Yeah, and then so came time, so my first run, right, I didn't have our labels approved yet, so we were still waiting for the TTB to approve our labels. So we had to put our wine, after it got bottled, in storage in shiners. Shiners are basically bottles that have juice and cork in it, but no label. And I had to basically back up and say, okay, it's not July now, folks. It's going to be around October, November. And sure enough, here we are. Got the labels on it 3 weeks ago, and we've shipped out of 250 cases, 230 will come here to Indy. And 20 are staying in California in the Bay Area for 3 restaurants that I'm supplying to, and for friends as well. So,
well, now tell me about the name of the wine and the name of your wines. Yeah. You know, the wine itself and the wines in general.
Yeah, Scribble Scribble was brought to me by my son Max at the age of 8. He brought this picture, this artwork of a mosaic like wine bottle in black with a table and a light in the background. But on the label was tattered and it had two scribble marks in wine in cursive. And I said, Max, what's this? And he goes, Dad, easy. It's scribble, scribble, wine. And I looked at him and I said, every scribble tells a story. Right? Because like when you're sitting down, like we've all done that, we've all talked about owning our own bar and you start throwing stuff down on a napkin and you start scribbling stuff down and you're like, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, you know, and I wanted to prove to my children that my dream of making wine was going to be reality, but I was going to include them in the process. And I just think it's BS that people like wineries or businesses go out and hire a marketing firm for $50,000 to pay to tell them what their idea is. Who better to tell your marketing idea than yourself, right? And I've always been a self-promoter, shameless at best. But, I mean, this is serious. So scribble, scribble, wine. Every scribble tells a story. But my wines are named after my children. Bella Boo is a Muscat Canelli that we sourced out of Lake County. It's our first release. You first release the whites because they're stainless steel. You get the cash flow going. That's kind of the idea for a winemaker.
And so this is the one that you brought to Indianapolis right now.
Yep, and this is killer with Thai food, Indian spicy food, Mexican spicy food, sushi.
Now, we've been thinking that it would probably go good with Thanksgiving, just saying. Oh,
for sure. I've sold a couple cases to friends and family that are, they're just like, we want to celebrate this at Thanksgiving and just kind of pay honor to you. And I'm just like, it humbles me. I'm kind of floored about all the response about people and their support. I'm very thankful. Very humbled, very gratified at just how the reception of the wine has been.
Now, you've been in Indianapolis this past week.
Yeah.
Tasting the wine at various places. So how has the response been?
Big George, Greek Islands, Monday night, went through three cases. He's been shamelessly promoting us every day of the week. He loves the juice. Said it reminded him something in Corinth. Tuesday night, we were here at Mass Ave Wine Shop with Lisa, and we just tore down the house. I mean, we went through some wine and it was just an awesome experience. She had three little one bites that she paired with it, kind of like the Turkey Day kind of suggestions, and it really, people were just blown away. So that makes me happy, puts a smile on my face. Wednesday last night, we were at Chef Joseph's, the connoisseur room, and he paired a nice scallop ceviche with it, and that floored people, and that was beautiful. And it was very more intimate, like last night versus what it was at Mass Ave. It was so crazy. So that was a nice just to kind of decompress. And then I went and saw the boys at St. Elmo's. You know, I'm dropping bottles off to people and saying, try my first vintage. You know, I'm so proud of it. And then we went to, tonight's going to be Vina Villa. Friday will be Louis Wine Dive. Southside, the reason why I did that, because I'm a Southport grad, 1987, and I got a lot of connections Southside. And all my friends are like, man, I want to taste this. I'd like to buy some. I'd like to support you. That's what it's truly about. It's literally, it's just about, you know, if they like it, they'll buy it, you know, and that's a good thing. But what I'm seeing, people are drinking it and going, can I get another taste? I'm like, okay, you like it. It's good. It's just amazing.
We've been talking with Indy native Dean Wilson of Scribble Scribble Wine about what he's been up to since heading to California to learn more about the wine business. We'll be back with more on Dino's Wines here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Longtime local wine guy Dean Wilson moved to California 2 years ago to live the dream of learning how to make wine. He was back in Indy this past week to debut his first wine, Bella Boo Muscat Canelli, which he reports has been enthusiastically received. We stopped by the Mass Ave Wine Shop while he was in town to talk about what's still to come for Dean's Scribble Scribble Wine. So now, what are the next wines that are coming out? Continue with the progress of the story.
Yeah, Zinfandel. So we were sitting at Michael David Winery where they make Seven Deadly Zins, and me and my friend Shannon, Vicky was working, I think, that day, and this is like first year we're there, and I'm tasting this Petite Syrah, Earthquake Petite Syrah. I'm like, man, this is good. And the guy next to me goes, well, thank you. And I'm like, well, who are you? And he goes, I'm the farmer. Those are my grapes. And I'm like, right on. I go, you don't make wine? He goes, no. He goes, I'm just a farmer named Steve Perrin. So I said, well, you got a card? And we shook hands right there. I said, well, I'd like to buy. And the guy behind the bar named Mike, he's like, yeah, Dino, he's got really clean vineyards, maintains them well. His Zin was planted in 1960, Petite Syrah 1996. So we'd like to say old vine, but I'm not going to call my Zin old vine. I'm going to, instead, I'll put, it's my Zin is going to be called Lucille. So like Lucille, the guitar to B.B. King was his muse. Lucille, my daughter, who's one now, is my muse.
Sure, the baby born out there, right?
Right, yeah. Vicky was 8 months pregnant, and she was swollen. And we went out to pick grapes. September 13th was our first time to pick the Lucille vineyard. So back four rows, we literally sourced from the back four rows of each of the vineyards. So Zin is on the left and Petite's on the right. And we get the back four rows of what we can manipulate and what we can work with. It's not our vineyard, but he allows us to do what we'd like to do to get the best product. So we went in there and handpicked the Zin, and at the time we were picking, a little cluster fell off and hit her on the belly and then bounced into the bucket. So we like to say Lucille had a little bit of help. So our Zin is planted 1960. We went with a 30% French oak to give you that vanilla nose. We went with a 30% American oak to give you the breadth on the mouthfeel. And then we went with 40% neutral oak to keep the fruit forward and keep it going and lasting, because we wanted this wine to represent the vineyard. We added 12.5% Petite Syrah of the same vineyard. So all the stuff is from the same vineyard, same location in Lodi near the Malquame AVA next to the river. So the same thing. So Lucille's our Zin, 200 cases there. And then when we tasted, I had the group out from Rhodes Beverage to taste the wines, and they literally tasted the Petite, and they were like, okay, are we going to blend Zin with this Petite? And everybody tasted the Petite, and they're like, oh, heck no. It's like chocolate, blackberry, big, herbaceous, and tannic, and it's just a beautiful styled wine. That's going to be called Max after my son, the artist.
From the label,
so
right?
You think of Max. You think, so when I talk about Petite Syrah, it's got Max flavors, maximum mouthfeel, maximum colors, right? So this is Max's wine. 150 cases on that. And then we did a co-fermentation of half Zin, ton of Zin, and half ton of Petite Syrah. We co-fermented those together. Usually you ferment alone, but we co-fermented those together. And it smells like chocolate cake, dark fruit, and it's got this cherry kind of tart component on the nose, and then black fruit to follow. It's just wonderful. And that's called the Frizz. That's dedicated to my mom, who died of leukemia. So we are going to pass on $5 per bottle towards Leukemia Lymphoma Society. We did 3.7 tons of Syrah out of Fields family, and they're in Lodi. They make killer Syrah. And when I brought my Syrah back, and after it started fermenting and coming through to make wine, Bob Colarossi at Estate Crush was like, Dino, this is some of the best Syrah I've smelt come across my winery in a long time, because it's an estate crush, so we get to make wine at his facility. But he's like, this stuff smells insane good. So the Syrah will be named after my son, who's a Marine, and it's going to be called Leatherneck. So
very nice.
And I implore my kids to be involved, you know, but I'm the one telling the story, and the story is about my children. And this, you know, I'm no longer living for myself. This isn't about me having a restaurant with my name on it. People are like, well, why didn't you want to put your name on a bottle of wine? I'm like, because my ego has been deflated and my attitude has been put in check. And I'm not here for me anymore. I'm here for my children and my family and my friends.
Well, what else? What can we expect in the future?
So we got Syrah 15. So we'll have Muscat Canelli 15 is about to be released in March. So as soon as we sell out of this stuff, we're almost halfway through this. 250 cases. We sold about 125 already. So I think we're done something right. Obviously, some people like it. So 15 will have Zin, up 1 ton extra of Zin, Petite Syrah, and Syrah. 16 next year, we'll do Muscat, but we're bouncing up production from 4 tons to 10 tons. With that, 16 is going to provide us Muscat, Zinfandel again from the back four row, Petite Syrah, the blend, Syrah, and then we're going to do Cabernet out of Potter Valley and Mendocino. It's just all about hands-on and not trying to make a bunch of it. This year, I talked to Steve, our farmer, and I'm like, I'd like to experiment with you. And he goes, what do you mean? I go, well, I would like to show other wine makers what they can do with your vineyard. He goes, what do you mean? I said, well, how about we show them 3 different styles of wine from one vineyard? So early on, like this year we harvested late August, early September. We were like 2 weeks ahead of schedule. So what I want to do is harvest like in July at about 22 bricks, Zin and Petite, in or late July, early August, and I want to make a rosé style out of those. And so I want to show him that his wines can make rosés. And then we want to harvest a normal harvest, so our Zin and our Petite, getting those in at normal table wine. And then we want to do a late harvest, kind of like a port style with Zin and Petite. And I want to show his diversification of his vineyard, how he can approach other winemakers to source his vineyard. Instead of just coming in there pulling out all at the same time, let's pull this out early, mid, and late and show the diversification of just that vineyard and how good the fruit could be. So that's what I'm going to do in 16. So we'll have a lot of fun stuff coming in 16.
You're a busy guy.
Yeah, and a stay-at-home dad, right?
Well, that's right. So you are doing that too.
Yeah, I raise a one-year-old named Lucille. And honestly, you've seen some videos on Facebook. She comes with me into the vineyards. She likes grapes. There's a picture of her sitting on a barrel holding a ring that attaches pump overs and stuff, and she's teething on that, and I love it. Behind her are the Zinfandel barrels of Scribble Scribble wine, so that's her vintage. You know, it's Lucille's Zin. It's been a blessing. It's been a well-received. I feel fortunate for what I'm doing, but I can honestly tell you I never thought it would happen this quick. It's the full circle of everything. When I went into the old Dino's Vino, the Pioneer, beautiful. Boy, they've put so much money into that, but they did it right. And they're like, man, are you upset you don't own the restaurant anymore? And I'm like, are you kidding, man? I'm making wine. I'm so happy for these people. You know, people, you know, need to get it in life that there's always a final destination of what you want to do. And I tell people this every day. They're like, man, I don't know what I want to do in life. I'm looking for this job, that job. I said, what do you want to do for the rest of your life? I said, what makes you happy? What makes you tick? When my buddy RJ is like, oh, I like to sing. I said, well, then start singing, brother. Start singing. Get on a mare. You know, do whatever you need to do. Go do it. Go get paying gigs. Go sing your heart's content. And that's what I'm telling people, because I don't feel like I'm working anymore. I don't feel like I'm working. It's not. I get to walk in the vineyards. I get to pick grapes. I get to talk to great winemakers. I get to talk to people that talk about oak and stainless steel and grapes. And I'm like, ha, 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 ha. This is passion. This is what I've wanted to do my whole life. And if this is working, well, clock me in.
We've been talking with Dean Wilson of Scribble Scribble Wine. For more information on the wines, you can look for him on Facebook or go to scribblescribblewine.com. You've been listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 and WFYI.org. I'm your host, Jolene Katzenberger. Thanks so much for tuning in to our Week Before Thanksgiving show, and thanks also to our guests, Tia Agnew of New Day Craft, Lisa Cunningham of the Mass Ave Wine Shop, Aaron Eds of Country Mouse City Mouse, and Dean Wilson of Scribble Scribble Wine. And thanks also to producer John Katzenberger for helping to bring you Eat Drink Indiana Radio.